I've got one. We'll just kick off with that because I thought this was fairly disgusting. Everybody that's out there for the pre-show, welcome. You know what we should do is take this time when we have only two people out there and retweet the show real quick. And that would be.
I guess the sad thing about my comment is that that shows that I'm getting very desensitized to a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, actually, last week was pretty quiet, relatively.
Yeah.
Until Sunday.
Yeah, right up till Sunday.
When they tried to start the Civil War.
Well, I'm hoping people are noticing how, like, a lot of these events are planned for weekends. Like, whether it's events that assassination attempts or like military like movements over, especially over in the Middle East, or developments in the markets that are going to have massive impacts. They let the news spill out on the weekends and let it kind of like wash over everybody, so the impact isn't as jarring.
Yeah, it seems like Friday night and Sundays are crazy.
Yep.
Excuse me, I'm tweeting.
One thing I did, I shared on my like Facebook about like the Hezbollah using those beepers, that massive beeper attack. I really hope that's like kind of like eye opening to people that have that saw the news and haven't really thought of like the different angles of like attack vectors nowadays with like technology and everything. Because I was like, they did this with what was it, 4,000 beepers?
Yeah.
I mean, relatively unnoticed. Like nobody would have thought anything. They would have, like it would have been weird in America for somebody to be using a beeper. Like nobody uses that anymore. But but like one thing that it, like my mind went immediately to was like, okay, now think about like the 10 to 20 million that have crossed the southern border in the United States that are undocumented. We don't know what they crossed into the border, like crossed the border with.
Right.
Like maybe it was 400,000 beepers. Like yeah. we don't know. Like that would only be like one every what, like 5 to 10 people, something like that. They're just carrying a beeper. They don't know what's on it.
No, the easiest thing for them to come across the border is some kind of bio.
Yeah. That's my biggest, like, that's if anything is going to be haunting my dreams, it's that.
Yes, I agree.
Bioweapon, huh?
Bioweapon. Yep.
You know, it's interesting. I used to work with one of the colonels that used to be over in a, let's just call it a place in the territory of Japan that had a bio lab in it. And, you know, the things that she was in charge of and the, you know, what they said they had and how they were, I mean, literally genetically targeting certain ethnicities, you know, this was probably 20 years ago. And, you know, probably to where that's come to now, like it's definitely a reality. I don't know, you know, how desperate somebody would have to be to use something like that to go after somebody genetically or an entire, I don't know, genetic line. But yeah, who knows, man? 2024 is all bets are off now.
That's like one of the next stages in combat, right? Especially for assassination is like, if you can, like those kinds of like initiatives that are working behind the scenes or behind the veil, and they get to the point of where it's like, all right, we want to knock off this like entire family or bloodline or branch of their family tree. And you just use a technology that can explicitly target them and not target anybody. Like, I think that was the plot of one of the recent 007 films with Daniel Craig. It was Spectre.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Like, I keep referring back to how, like, there's Hollywood, but then if you pay attention, like, there's a lot of signals as far as, like, capabilities that are put out in Hollywood, because, like, in order to, like, grip the populace, they have to make them parts of it based on reality.
Well, and I mean, like, Jesus Christ, look at The Simpsons, for God's sakes. Like, I mean, you know, at the time, and you know, this past week, you know, was 9/11, and I don't know that we even talked about it too much on the last show, but with 9/11, you go back in history, through cartoons especially, and it's you can see all of these cartoons that are, you know, literally planes flying into the towers, the towers being demolished. This goes back into the 1990s, for God's sakes. And yeah. So when you start to see, like, you know, all this foreshadowing done in certain areas going, yeah, man, this is going to happen at some point, right? And then all of a sudden it comes to fruition, and then somebody compiles all this stuff thanks to technology now, you know, yeah. 23 years later, and you're sitting there going, what on earth? I mean, you want to talk about some creepy ground plans, you know, way, way out. Somebody also pointed out, you know, in 9/11, the Roman numerals. If you take those Roman numerals and you do the IV and then the XI in that, and you throw these things together, what it looks like, and you're sitting there going, holy shit. I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole right now. I just think, yeah, there's so much that goes on in communications and media and entertainment that is, you know, pre-laid plans going, hey, if you know what you're looking for, maybe you've got some understanding of what's coming.
Oh, that's terrifying.
Wow. Totally derailed.
like the other thing too, like, especially with
those UFOs, man.
we're gonna have so much fun tonight.
When it comes to like aggregating like the stuff of the past thanks to the internet, like, yeah. It also shows, in my opinion, dots that were planned on not being connected.
You want to get into that a little bit?
Well, I mean, because because it's not just the cartoons; it's also like the films of those eras too. Like they would talk about in the movies, like one of the characters would be referring to like a certain tycoon of industry or whatever, or a banking family that clearly decided that they did not want their name being mentioned in any sort of entertainment or public sphere, because then, like, you look at the stuff for the last 30 years has been produced, and I don't hear a lot of these names being mentioned, like whether it's the Rothschilds or JG, it's not JG Wentworth, that's a freaking commercial, but there was one type. There's the Rockefellers, but there was one tycoon in particular that's involved in the Operation Gladio stuff that I was just like, okay, I've never heard that. E.H. Harriman, that's who it was.
Hmm.
I think he was a railroad tycoon.
Hmm. A lot of those, man. I mean, yeah, and back to The Simpsons, right? Like, Mr. Burns is obviously the Rothschild, right? Like, yeah. Literally the Rothschild in yeah. the whole thing.
It's just... that, like, mix it with that, and then like the aspects of history that have been intentionally buried. Like, one of my favorite focal points right now is the Khazarian Empire. Like, I had, like, the fact that I had never ever heard of it before, and history in school was supposed to be like comprehensive or some like nonsense. It's just like, dude, like, there was a whole ass empire that was like just north of the Ottomans that, like, what, we're just gonna ignore them? Like, what the hell are we gonna...
I like that pie chart that says, you know, the 6 million Jewish from World War II, right?
Yeah,
that's like 90% of the it's depicted as 90% of the deaths in World War II, and then you have the 70 to 80 million Russians. It's like 10%. Yeah. And you're sitting there like, why? I think it was probably closer to 2015, 2016 when I learned that there was like that many Russians that died, like in World War II. That is completely left out of your prescribed textbooks that they also own for, you know, public indoctrination.
Yeah, they don't want any empathy for a potential future or current future enemy. They don't want any empathy for it.
Yeah.
Which is just disgusting, in all honesty.
I don't know if you heard, this week we passed the 1 million casualty, not deaths, but casualty in Ukraine. So between the Ukrainians, really?
It was it's 400,000 on the Russian side, another 600,000 on the Ukrainian side, or give or take.
I thought it was flipped. I thought it was 600 645 on the Russian and 400 on the Ukrainian.
I was under
give it a standard error of estimate of like 25% on both sides.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah, guys you'll never find. Right.
Yeah. Or just like there's no way of really deducing like who's actually giving factual information or not, because all sides involved are lying.
Yeah, you read both sides and you're like, okay, that's the same story and it's totally different facts, right? So that one's hard to read what the actual facts are.
Yeah, and it's also, I mean, it's also a war zone, and for you know the guys that have seen that kind of shit up close and personal, you know for a fact, like. Like, I don't know if that guy and that guy are the same guy or like they're separate or, you know, like whatever the case is. And, you know, sometimes you're not going to know what happened.
Shane freeze up on you?
No.
No.
Okay.
You guys, you still good?
It might just be a hiccup in the connection. It'll probably catch up for him.
Yeah. Can you guys hear me now? Are you guys good?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I've been hearing you fine the whole
time. The other side of that is a lot of what happens out there is just natural, you know, natural cleanup. When I say natural, like you've got your vultures, you've got your wild dogs, you've got cats, you've got other animals that are hungry in those zones that have been displaced. They don't have owners anymore. They aren't feeding them. And it's really sick, but you know, it's what it happens. And those guys are out there,
nature.
You know, tugging on bones and, you know, wrestling over the scraps of human remains. And that's one of those pieces that, you know, I hope people don't have to see ever in their lifetime, but I hope they understand that, hey, literally, like, this is what happens in these places, and this is why it's so damn important that we avoid this at, you know, I'm not going to say all costs, but we need to avoid it if we can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, like, saying to avoid it at all costs is like,
meh. Nah. Well,
but politicians aren't the one out there fighting, so.
No.
Yeah. What do you, that brings up a good question. I was thinking about this not long ago for you guys. Is, you know, it always seems like the case in history where you've got the old tyrants, you know, sending off the young generation to go do
always
all the state business and die. And if the young people ever figure that out and get and they unite and they're like, hey man, like, no, we don't think we're going to fight your wars. In fact, we're going to run a counter, you know, I'd say probably counterinsurgency against you. And I'll tell you what, you know, you get the young people that aren't so damn indoctrinated, just step back and realize, hey man, you guys are all being played by a bunch of really old, really rich, you know, dudes and dudettes out there. This shit stops almost immediately.
Well, that's actually why I think that what's going on in America with and like the Yuri Bezmenov like strategy, like his whole like interview where he talked with what's his name that wrote the Creature from Jekyll Island. I think some people or maybe a lot of people when they hear that strategy, they think that it's the intent of converting America to communism. But I think that intent was to actually produce that environment that you were just talking about, Shane. Because I don't know about you two. I mean, you guys probably know my opinion, but like America is starting to look like that environment of where it's either like where like because like we're like personally, I think we're in a situation where the U.S. can like they can't afford to try and institute a draft. Because A, the population is not a condition where they want any of them being soldiers anyway, unless you just want them to be cannon fodder and you're helping out your enemy. B, if they were to institute a draft and like we see all the chaos with politics and everything, everybody's like extremely polarized on all ends. Like nobody, like I don't think there are enough people that would be interested or have patriotism to actually like go along with a draft without resisting it. So like I think that America, that Yuri Bezmenov might be right. Like we might be set on a path that there's really no way of avoiding like the ultimate outcome. It's like the whole, and like this gets kind of like to what we're doing here with Bitcoin Veterans, right? Is we're trying to like dispel all this knowledge and information, not just like with the military stuff, but like what we're doing in our chats and everything around like homesteading, ham radio stuff, like all this other, like citadels, and like basically we're just like preparing for what I think we're preparing for what could be the inevitable and just making sure that the landing isn't as harsh.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably a good place to say, here's the teaser. This show is going to be lit. We've got Randy Kelly here with us tonight, and it is we are going to go over so much information, I imagine, in geopolitics and Bitcoin and how it all relates. This is going to be, I think, an outstanding show. So hold on your butts. Randy Kelly is coming at you. Yeah, let's go. We got Randy Kelly in the house. If you guys don't know Randy Kelly is a former SEAL sniper. He also puts together our daily intelligence briefs, which we are all really appreciative of. And there's going to be some new productions coming from that, hopefully here in the near future, as Bitcoin starts to ramp up and hit that God candle out there. I'm going to put a lot more work into that kind of stuff. But at any rate, we've got a hell of a show for you tonight. We got to pay some bills real quick. So stick around and we are going to have a hell of a show. Black Sheep Ammunition. Veteran-owned and operated, Black Sheep Ammunition graciously donated 6,000 rounds to Bitcoin veterans for the Nashville Range Day event. Use Bitcoin 10 for 10% off. Black Sheep Ammunition is not made for the faint of heart. They craft ammo for the black sheep. For the watchful defenders called to hunt, provide, and protect, and for the brave patriots who boldly keep watch atop the hill, and for the weirdos who aren't afraid to stray from the flock. When courage calls you to action, Black Sheep will be there to answer. Their mission is to supply every freedom-loving American with enough firepower to get the job done twice. Check them out at blacksheepammo.com. Use the code Bitcoin10 for 10% off. Paladine Tower Tactics offers professional-grade firearms and tactics training to equip men and women to be protectors of life. The owner and lead instructor, Scott Wiley, is a combat veteran, a former airborne infantryman who fought in Afghanistan. After the Army, Scott started Paladine Tower Tactics in 2015 while serving his community in law enforcement. He has 10 years of experience in law enforcement as a SWAT officer and firearms instructor. Over the last decade, Scott has had the privilege of training hundreds of students from all experience levels in the military, law enforcement, and the civilian world. His passion is to equip his students for the gunfight, the legal fight, and the spiritual fight. All three will take place in and after a violent confrontation. Check out PaladineTowerTactics.com to learn more about the course offerings or to host a class on a range near you. Follow Paladine Tower Tactics on Noster, X, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Yes, he does accept Bitcoin. Scott is a patriot who loves God and loves liberty. His training is some of the highest quality available. Go check him out and support his veteran-owned business. All right, we're back with Randy Kelly. We are Bitcoiners. We are veterans. This is Bitcoin Veterans. We do this every Tuesday at 7 p.m. We get here a little bit earlier for a pre-show if you want to come hang out. We'll take any topics tonight that you guys want to throw at us as well. We're going to get into some geopolitics, but we are here to put you on the mission. We are here to give you a passion in your life to wipe out that nihilism. Obviously, in this changing world, there is something to do. And this group, this Bitcoin Veterans group, they have that optimism. And whether it's good times, bad times, we are going to be that group that's out there trying to make things better, providing solutions in freedom tech and other ways, not only with your local community, but not only nationwide, but globally. And I got to tell you, to be part of this group and to see what it's doing right now, incredible. We need all 16, 17 million veterans on this thing as soon as possible. And, you know, there's an old saying in Bitcoin, you get Bitcoin at the price you deserve. If you're putting in the study, you're going to get that a lot sooner and you're also going to free yourself. And so, tonight we got Randy Kelly. Like I said, we got, my other co-host here, Mike Hobart. Welcome, gentlemen. Thanks for being here tonight.
Dude, I look forward to this every week, so I couldn't miss it.
Yeah, glad to be here. Thanks, Shane. And I appreciate the optimism. We need that sometimes when we're looking at what's going on in the world, where it's headed. It's so easy to be the doom lord all the time. We need to work through that. Look at what's really happening and be realistic. Look at the possibilities, prepare for them, and continue to work for the best, you know, be optimistic. So I appreciate that.
Well, yeah, I see this all the time, you know, and I think guys that are very much involved in their faith, right? Like they've really leaned into this thing. I don't know how you guys think, but for myself, you know, there's times when, especially at night, when the day calms down, I'm doing my reflection, I'm doing my prayer, I'm you know, really concentrating on, you know, this instead of this, you know, sometimes you can get into that place where things seem pretty dark as you're, you know, kind of gaming the system. Like I think a lot of us do. We sit there and we strategize and we think of scenarios, you know, close to us, further out, you know, it kind of in that order. And as you go through this, I know a lot of us have seen a lot of things, and that can get pretty dark sometimes, right? Knowing what you know, knowing what's on the horizon, you know, that can kind of get dark when you're starting to do all this threat analysis and wargaming. And then you get back to really trusting yourself, trusting your faith, and trusting that, hey, this is all going on for a purpose. And how do I fit in this? And how do I, you know, kind of adapt my skill set for the people around me, my friends, my family, my communities out there, and help them understand it from that point of view as well, to give them, hey, listen, you still got breath in your lungs, man. You can take another step. You can do something right now. Yeah. So what are we doing? So tonight we are talking about geopolitics. And I imagine the arc of this show is usually doom and gloom up front, and then we kind of bring it back with, you know, kind of like I was just talking about, we bring it back with some Bitcoin, some understanding of freedom tech, and what the solutions are. So you know, Randy, tonight you asked me to bring up this one especially from Jason Lowry. Do we want to start there and get into it?
No, not yet. Okay. Not yet. No, let's start here. Let's start with current state of affairs. And 2024, here we are. The United States is still the current hegemon. Hegemon is nothing more than the bully, the world bully. All right. I've talked quite a bit about this in our Daily Intelligence brief, but I think it's important to actually understand this. When I was getting my MBA, it was in global business, basically global leadership. So all the courses were, you know, it was interesting because many of the instructors were globalists and some of them were internationalists. Big difference. And it's really important to understand the difference. Where does the power reside, right? Is it, now power is nothing more than the ability to take care of a concern, right? So if I'm hungry, if I have power, I can go make myself a sandwich, right? Or if I have financial power, I can actually buy the meat to make a sandwich, right? So those are the concerns. So we all have concerns. Power is just nothing but the ability to be able to take care of concerns. We all have power. The more we work, the more fiat we get, the more financial power we have. There's many different kinds of power. But in this case, when you're talking about global geopolitics, there is a natural desire for power to be pushed up, or to be sucked up, if you will. And globalists are the people who want the power above nation states. And you see that very much in the European Union, the United Nations. They're trying for that kind of thing. But it doesn't work very well. So many nations hold their own sovereignty. So internationalists believe that nations should hold power over their citizens, and that there's a lot of mechanisms to be able to work in between countries to be able to settle disputes. So it's interesting, even at a high scholarly level, you'll run into globalists and you'll run into what I call internationalists. So I was one of the few entrepreneurs / internationalists, even in my school. But anyway, when we were talking about the global hegemonic theory, which is a theory put out by Charles Kindenberger about 100 years ago or so, a little bit less than that, about how all he does is look back, and it's just a perspective to be able to look at world power. And right now, the hegemon holds six specific types of power to be able to control world affairs. It's built in the economic structure. On top of that is laid military structure, because you can't have military without money and resources. Cultural, technology, diplomatic, what else? Control of public goods. This is really important, because oil in the last 100 years has been the main public good in the world. Cultural influence is a big one. So these are all the components of global hegemony. And the U.S. has had it since 1945, since the end of the World War II. It's beginning to decline. If you look at each of these components, our economic power is beginning to wane. Okay. And we can blame that on currencies. We can blame that on debt. We can blame that on lack of manufacturing, all sorts of stuff. Our military strength is beginning to wane. Our political influence around the world is definitely waning. Don't cross that line. Don't cross that line, right?
So it's pretty ridiculous on the political front. Almost like they have propped up puppets as a caricature of where America is at. Like, the old man is on his way out. You've got this, this young drunk inheritor of where we're at in America that's taking that side of it. And even unfortunately for the Republican side, that guy's getting pretty old himself. And it all just seems like caricatures out there to me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so the next one is cultural influence. I mean, how are we respected around the world? What was the last time you went to Europe or even Asia, right? And they don't laugh at you or make fun of you or whatever. Technological superiority. We've held that for a long time. We've maintained that. And I still think we're pretty strong in it. But boy, there's people nipping on our heels really, really quick on that one. Diplomatic skill. the ability to bring people together and work through problems and all of that. Not so much, right? And the last one, control of public goods. Well, the main public good over the last 100 years is oil, right? So do we have control over that anymore? And the answer is it's waning, right? So those are all the components of hegemony, which means if we're waning, if the United States is waning in our global power, all right, the world does not like a vacuum of power. Okay. Before us was the British, before them was the Ottomans, before them, you can look, there's others, there's the Dutch, the French, they had their own versions of world or regional hegemony. We know that the U.S. is beginning to decline. So what comes next, right? And you can see everything we complain about, we opine about, is just as a result of our declining world power. And other nations feel it, sense it, smell it. And you can see by their actions in the world that they're going to act on it. So enter into this world, Bitcoin, right? Well, before we get into Bitcoin, but I just want to open that area up right there. That is what global hegemonic theory is. It only lasts so long. There has to be a boss at the top, a national boss. There are all alternatives. And we had major debates about this in our university courses. Can we have bilateral or multinational or even global governance? And I argued no, because imagine us with China and Russia all trying to organize globally and govern the world. It ain't gonna happen, right?
Yeah, they. What was it? Horowitz. I'm trying to think of something. It was a book that I read long ago in college. It was something about civilizations, and they talked about the unipolar and multipolar world. When you look at unipolar versus multipolar, there was the argument for a long time, which I think was built on a bed of lies, honestly, by the same people who print most of the books and make you read things and run the universities and the media out there. This goes, I think, without saying, is the unipolar world that existed while America was quote unquote in its heyday, maybe during the 1950s to the 1980s, early 80s at that. That wasn't a quiet period, and it definitely wasn't a violence free period at that time. There was, we've been deployed in God knows how many, 120 plus countries in terms of just bases alone, not to mention, where we've got other assets that, are basically DOD-esque. The unipolar world is, I think, was sold to us in an idea that never really existed. It was just a fictional fairy tale to begin with. And now that you've got, culture changing, whether it's, the culture war is changing because of the amount of free speech that we at least have on this honeypot called, X, or, the rapid communications in terms of, technology that we have now. But there's something changing. And it seems to me, especially because of Bitcoin, I think Bitcoin is kind of forcing the hand to where we're getting to the point where there's a revolution of the people, and the revolution of the people worldwide, to sit there and say, this system, whatever it is, whether it's here in the United States or over in Europe or, even in, parts of Russia and Asia, it's changing. And this relationship between the state and the people is going to have to change.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, like one thing to also, kind of continuing off of like Brandy's little synopsis of hegemonic power, is like there's also like within culture, there's intracultural like dynamics and intercultural dynamics, right? Like what he was talking about with like the cultural dynamics of like the US with external parties, and then because the US is so large, the intracultural dynamics of like state to state political like party, like religious groups, whatever, like they're like all of these like are different, like they're different like gradients within the actual like massive power structures that like Randy gave us. And then on top of that, kind of like in between the economic goods or the public goods and the cultural topic is also like public behavior, right? And like being the hegemon, having control over the education system, like in pushing ideas to be sold like the unipolar world, have massive ramifications for how you can steer that populace into whichever means you want, right? Because like when you have like coming out of World War II, when you have a population that's emboldened because we were propped up as the heroes of the greatest world war up until this point, and then you push down like all these other ideas, like we're going to be a unipolar world, we're going to be like the all-time hall keeper essentially, or hall monitor, protecting all the trade routes, and because we're protecting the trade routes, we're also going to wrangle over power of oil and all this other stuff. It's just like once you start like seeing things like structured in that way, you start to really understand like how it is we got here, right? And it's like it gets kind of scary, because then you're like, okay, what hasn't been shared to us that wasn't allowed to be shared, that, and I think Shane, like you mentioned, with free speech and then the telecommunications capabilities, is like a lot of people around the world, not just in America, are finding out it's like, hey, like this story that we've been sold isn't necessarily the reality. And like especially with the unipolar world and like the military assets, like you mentioned, around the world, again, part of the gradient is the outward expression or like the outward like show of force. But then there's the stuff that's going on behind the scenes. Like you popped into that spaces earlier that I was participating in, talking about Operation Gladio, and like all of these developments and initiatives that have been carried on behind the scenes and behind significant layers of veiling or smoke screens so that people can't figure out this, like, hey, like we've actually been kind of the guiding hand behind a lot of changeover of like presidential or presidencies or like entire governments or whatever.
Yeah.
To maybe add a fun anecdote here real quick to lighten this this talk we're having. I don't know, among the Bitcoin veterans out here, there's a lot of us that are big Shane Gillis fans, and one of his bits, Randy is a Navy SEAL number one fan. As fans, you know, there's one bit that I look back at, and when he mentioned it, I had a pretty good laugh at it and really didn't take it too seriously until recently. Mike, you were talking about like kind of the outward appearance of the U.S. military, you know, once upon a time probably being the most, you know, feared military the planet has seen
and respected.
Yeah, in our let's just say recorded history. But there was a point where he starts talking about, you know, it's all fun and games until the Vikings show up, you know, and you know they look at the mothers and daughters and they're like, they're gonna rape you guys. And then instead of, you know, the skull and bones or whatever they're going to throw up, they throw up the rainbow flag, and then the guys just start looking at each other like, oh shit.
And no, they're only here for us.
Yeah, damn, they're only here for us. And you know, I laugh about that a little bit, but considering the DEI bullshit that's gone on in the military lately and really kind of what it's become, you know, maybe they're more to be feared now because of who makes up the ranks of some of these guys, not only in terms of, you know, their preferences, but also their ineptness.
Yeah, I mean, that I think that's more terrifying for us than it is for any of our quote unquote enemies. The ineptitude, yeah, of a soldier is not something to be relished, in my opinion.
No. So, continuing on, here we are at the decline of the U.S. empire. It is happening. I mean, nobody can really deny it, I don't think. But what's next, right? And I think as I look back at each of the transitions between hegemons, it's never pretty. All right, and there's a king of the hill fight that's going to happen, I think about the decline of the Romans, you know, any of them, and this is where it gets a little dark. Just because it doesn't have to be, but it historically is. So there are some who are going to come out and say, hey, we need to move into multipolar world. We need to take power and move it up into the global sphere. We need to regionalize. We need to balkanize. Or there's a few people who says maybe we need to decentralize, right? And there are some voices out there, and there are some tools out there, I think, that can move towards that. And of course, there's going to be the next, you know, the next nation states, and then we're not going to get rid of nation states anytime soon, that are going to vie for this. And I think our number one contender right now is China, because when you look at the components of hegemon, they're actually doing pretty well, and all of those, they're actually gaining strength and gaining power in each of those components. That doesn't mean they're there yet. I mean, we would know that, right? But they're not. Russia is having a hard time, primarily because of population issues. But they do have the resources. So that's, you know, so as we move forward, I don't know what's going to fall out. What I do know is all of these are going to fight to get to the top of that hill. And a winner will emerge. I don't know if it's going to be a nation state. I don't know if it's going to be a global power. It could be a decentralized power.
Yeah.
And then there's one more component that hegemonic theory had not considered. And it's been written about by Balaj Srinivasan in a book called The Network, The Rise of the Network State. This is a network state, not a nation state. And this is a network state that is digital, it's global, and it holds all of these types of power. Primarily on the economic, political, and cultural influence, and it's global. There is a rise of network stakes. Network stakes have happened in the past. You look at the Roman Catholic Church; it is a type of network state. The issue is that it's centralized power, right? But decentralized. Look at the evangelical movement; that is much less centralized, right? Much more regional and or you can even say, you know, very local. So there are different types of network states already out there. I think Bitcoin Veterans is one of those because it actually it has a purpose, a defined purpose, an understanding of people who understand all of these components pretty well. We may not be the best diplomats, but you know, war is nothing but a form of diplomacy, right? But it's interesting to me that Bitcoin Veterans can end up being one of these global network states in the very near future. Now, I'm sure there's going to be other ones. So that means power is decentralized, but it takes a certain type of power to be able to control many of these other kinds, right? Enter Bitcoin, right?
Yeah.
A decentralized, immutable record of a global computer system, as Jason Lowry calls it, of a system that can lock up cyberspace and is unassailable, immutable from other nation states. So that's where it's interesting. Go ahead.
I was going to say, on top of that, through its operation, it also incentivizes perpetual energy generation. And that energy generation feeds back and protects the network.
100%. And if you look at energy generation, life is all about energy. Who is a Tesla said, think in frequencies and power or something like that. When you think about that, the countries and the people and the regions who had power, any types of power, including electrical power, have done really well. Okay. You need electricity. You need power to be able to do things, right? So Bitcoin is the ultimate next step because it uses power and it pushes towards efficiencies in those areas. That's going to change the future pretty soon. So anyway, those are some of my thoughts, just generalized thoughts on where we're going. I haven't talked about Bitcoin exactly how that looks, but let me stop there for a second.
Yeah, I really like the idea of the Bitcoin Veterans becoming one of these, and I don't want to say dominant, but you know, I would hope, right? Like in the back of my brain, while you were talking about this, my brain started going, you know, in terms of a decentralized network that's going to hold a good amount, and I don't want to say, you know, power is power. They're going to hold a lot of Bitcoin, which is the potential for projection of power. And, you know, what a fine group to have with power, right? Is you've got a bunch of guys, a lot of them combat vets, you know, whether you are or not, that doesn't matter, but you got a lot of vets in general in this group that are begging people for peace. Like, hey, there are better methods than going out there and going into some sort of an attrition type of warfare with each other, that we can start to make progress. If you'll just stop with, you know, the overreach on power and leave people to be free, those free people, and this is the thing, is those free people are going to make politicians look like rock stars. Didn't you ever see, you know, the cantons over in Europe? You know, those cantons are decentralized and they do fairly well for, you know, that reason, is because those people are mostly free. And Bitcoin Veterans is no different in terms of the decentralization aspect. You start to look at a bunch of guys and gals who are coming together, who are putting their time and effort into this. And I say that as, you know, somebody that I you know, in this group, you always feel like the guy that's probably doing the least, because everybody is doing so damn much. You're like, man, I got to go do this. There's something in this network, this connection to each other, where you're like, I need to go work on something. I need to go do this. And it's not for this guy. It's for all these other guys out here.
Yeah.
And that's something I don't think you find, like, where trust has been eroded. You know, the veteran community, I think, still for the most part knows who it can trust, right? Like majors and below, right? So I say that kind of tongue in cheek, but you know, you still have this, you know, this network of trust, and then you have the verification side, the proof of work side, because you can't fake this stuff. It's too small of a community to fake this kind of stuff. So these guys that are coming in with this proof of work, with this kinship, with this, you know, I have an allegiance to my brothers in this space, and now you have projection of power on top of it over time. That is what we're building here. Is you think about it sometimes, and you look at what's going on, you're kind of mystified, like, holy hell, you know, how can we continue to do this? And the thing is I think I've gotten pretty comfortable with the idea is it's not up for a central authority to do. It doesn't work. It's like, nope. The best practices on earth don't work that way. You give people a mission. You make sure that there are maybe some base ground rules, like don't hurt people, don't take their stuff. We're all about peace. And then go make it happen, man. And consider what's downrange before you fire, right? Like that's kind of the whole thing. And you start to go, well, of course it's growing fast. Look, I mean, this is the optimum model, I think, going into you know, the rest of the century, that's going to change the face of culture. It's going to change the side of economics for sure. It's going to change power. It's going to change probably our faith. It's going to change so much in this world. And if it does it at the clip that technology is advancing under, this is going to rip people's faces off, just like the Omega candle. And it's going to be...
It won't be that fast, though. I'm pretty sure it won't be that fast, because technology, it's beginning to move faster than we can think, yeah. Right? How good are you with AI right now? Probably like 1 out of 10, right? All of us. Technology is moving much faster than we can actually keep up. And when it comes to our paradigms of, for example, like governance, that's going to take a big change, because to self-govern, you need one. Alex Svetsky talked about this last week. To have freedom and have response, to have the ability to take care of your concerns, you have to have responsibility and to act. Right. And you have to act. Right. So self-governance, decentralization requires that responsibility. And
I was going to add one thing to what Shane said, his little like tongue in cheek comment, is that like, I think that I honestly don't think it was really a tongue in cheek comment. I think it is very much like a reality, because like I've heard from probably like 5 or 6 other sources. Like I think I heard it from Colonel Manis. I've heard it from Tulsi Gabbard. I've heard it from Ivan Rankin. I've heard it from I think I've heard it from even Douglas McGregor, and like all of us have said it. Like what's going on with the DEI stuff nonsense, like within the military branches right now, like all of those individuals I just listed, including us, see it as the O5s, which I which should be colonels, right? If I'm not mistaken, the colonels on down. Like, those are the people that are like trustworthy in general to do the right thing. And I honestly think it's because like up to O5 is like the last rank where like this actually the doers.
Yeah.
Right. And that's what you guys are talking about. It's not like, and that, yeah. And that's like, that's the, ultimately that's the embodiment of like American ideals is like, hey, there's no centralized authority that is going to be like pushing us to do this in order for us. And in order for us to like actually get these things accomplished in the most effective, most impactful, most meaningful ways, it's not going to be, it's just like, oh, hey, dude, number three over here, you're just here, so you're gonna do this. I don't know what your skills are, I don't care, like you need to figure out how to do this and get it figured out. That's not how you do something well, right? You find out, like, you let people kind of like go out and do things the American entrepreneurship way, the ones that produce something effective and it starts proving its effectiveness, then you're like, okay, we're gonna lean into you more, here's more resources, keep doing this, improve upon it, do it better. Like, I think that's super important for people to understand. So like, because there's a lot of talk over the last 3 or 4 years in particular of like a lot of communists and socialists have gotten really emboldened. Like, oh, like talking about like how Randy was talking about how the American empire is like on its decline. Like, is the blood is just now entering the water. The sharks are circling, the sharks are taking bites out of us. And like the communists and socialists are popping up. It's like, oh, see, this is evidence that capitalism is failing. It's like, no, like capitalism actually, the American empire is like a testament that capitalism works and works very well. It's just that the bureaucracies that have been enabled because of like when an empire reaches its height, that's what brought it down. It's not capitalism. Capitalism isn't the source of failure here.
Yeah, we haven't been a capitalist nation, and you could probably argue since the 1860s, but you know, that's whatever, true. Whatever the case. Yeah, I think you're right. This whole you know, benefit of the doubt with trust out here for, you know, majors and below, I think is a good jumping off point. But we'll keep going, Randy. What we put in our little two bits here.
All right, so. If the U.S. is declining, there's all these people now going to start looking to grab that power. This is the time for decentralized networks, network states, if you will, to begin to grab those powers. Of course, nation states are going to continue to, they have jurisdiction over certain areas, obviously. And the sovereign individual of the book talked about this, right? At the end, they talked about what it looks like when you begin to become sovereign yourself and groups become sovereign. And it's crazy that this was written 20 years ago. And the only thing it was missing was the tool, the power tool to be able to, for this to happen. And now that we actually have it, if you haven't read that book, you really should read it, guys. Or just listen to it, whatever. But you will be blown away. It'll give you an idea of what it looks like to grab your own power and hold it. But it takes a major amount of responsibility. But anyway, so we're going to be moving into this. To borrow a term from the Japanese, the warring states period. And I'm not saying states, I mean warring nation states, network states, global states. We're going to be moving into this era. And if you study the warring states period in Japan, it was pretty bloody. There was a daimyo, you know, upheld by shogun, upheld by a samurai. There was several different shoguns vying for power, and they were all fighting each other and over territories. There was alliances and breaking a level of alliances. And you can already see that right now.
Yeah.
Trump is trying to ally himself with Bitcoiners. Well, then he goes and does something stupid with his announcement. It was the last night, I think. Yeah. But the point is, the alliances and all that is for just realize. And I think most Bitcoiners see through this. They know he doesn't know what he's talking about. They might look at somebody like RFK and understand that he actually does know. He's given proof of work, right? Trump hasn't. Yeah. That doesn't mean, I mean, obviously we can't vote for the alternative, but
he's on the team at least.
He's at least on the team, right? He may not understand today. But anyway, the point is, these kind of alliances will happen at a global scale. I think being as a network state, if you're going to be in there, if you're F3, if you're Bitcoin veterans, if you're churches, if you're, I don't know, whatever you build your network state as, maybe all the farmers build their own network state. I don't. You can be multiple citizens of different network states, but it's going to, you know, there's going to be work that must happen to be for that to be able to work. And of course, you know, the nation states are going to fight like crazy. So it's going to be an ugly time period. But if we understand what the components are and what we're fighting for, then we won't get swayed by pretty promises, if you will.
Randy, you make some really great points. I think, you know, we've entered that period. I think I was really convinced that the second assassination attempt was the kind of the Rubicon. You know, we're literally at war at this point. Where, if you're trying to assassinate a president of the United States or a former president of the United States who's running again, you are in war. And make no mistake, I think, you know, the powers that be, the communists, are going for it right now. Like they can't afford not to after, you know, not only the last 4 years and, you know, to the point of the technology being on our side. I think, you know, freedom tech especially. Right now, because there's so much information traveling so fast, so far, I see a lot of this being kind of short-circuited with technology. You can look all the way back to, you know, Syria. You know, Twitter was not great back then, but it was still moving pretty good. And during the time, I think it was Bashar al-Assad who, you know, was being accused of gassing his own people, you know, which made zero sense because the UN forces were already withdrawing. It was like, why would you do something that would, you know, not only keep the UN around, but like really ratchet things up. And so you start to see things like this where, because information is flowing so fast that, you know, there aren't appetites for a lot of the death and destruction and the falsification of narratives that it takes to get us into these conflicts in the first place.
Yeah.
And that's one of the key aspects of, you know, networks like this, and, you know, probably extremely, you know, why it's so extremely important that, you know, yourself, you know, you put together that daily intelligence brief. It's nothing but facts. If you guys aren't, you know, reading this thing, you really owe it to yourself to read it, because if there's somebody that understands objective facts, it's Randy, and he puts these together every damn day for you. And it is like, hey, this is the significant events in this sector, this sector, this sector, and this sector. And that in terms of cycling that around and understanding what's going on, helps us to short circuit a lot of these false flag operation type events and, you know, I guess perverted narratives that are all trying to take us to war.
Yeah. I wrote about this the other day in one of my comments. I was like, what I wanted to say, I didn't say it. I was a little more professional. But I wanted to say is, holy crap, there's a lot of junk out there right now. It's like, it's bad. I mean, I go through hundreds of articles every morning. I just speed through, read through them. And, you know, some of them are just, I get popped, you know, by the headline. I'm like, oh, that's real. And then I look, there's no facts, and it's just pure hate, discontent, TDS, you know, all sorts of interesting stuff. And It's getting worse. Obviously, this is the silly season. This is election season. Everybody has an agenda right now. But, oh, man, if, you know, I read hundreds of articles from left, right, center, international, you know, conspiracy to well put out. So it's hard. If you're not putting in the work, it's hard to find those facts. But just, you know, anyway, that was,
I think one thing that, Randy, that you definitely touched on, and I think Shane, you touched on it too, is that, like, even though I am the resident doom lord, like there's an aspect of all this, like with regards to like the overturning of the US empire, that, I still think that there's a possibility for things to go differently than the historical precedent has like laid down. I'm not saying that it will, but I think there's a possibility, just because America is still like the premier governmental experiment, right? Like, we are still structured differently than everybody else on the planet. And so, go ahead.
So why do you think we haven't been attacked by a major nation?
I think it's a combination of things. I think it's the First and Second Amendment make things more difficult. Doesn't make them impossible. It just makes things more difficult as far as like the, like we've talked about, the exchange of information and like the speed of information travel and all that. The freedoms for business, like entrepreneurship, helping us stay like the primo hegemon of technology and innovation in the world. I think that's been helping us too. And then there's also the geographical aspect of like defensibility for our country. Now, the thing is that I definitely agree with, like, obviously the doomer stuff I agree with from you, is that like we're getting to a point now where technology is allowing for the geographic defensibility to somewhat be kind of like circumvented, right?
Yeah.
And I think that the combination of all of those, there's a very small, narrow avenue of decision-making and opportunities that we could come out to where it's like, okay, so I'll just make it simpler and just like describe like what I see as like our potential path forward for like succeeding and not going all the way down the rabbit hole or down the road of like the Roman Empire, would be to a willful and intentional like tactical retreat or tactical retreat or withdrawal back to the United States to like really kind of like get some of the things ironed out here, like particularly manufacturing. Like, we should have been working with Central and South America on improving our like our trade routes and everything for resources, including gold and copper, because one of the prime copper mines is, I think it's down in Chile in South America. But then like, on top of that, like they're like just like the like a lot of our food we get from Brazil and Argentina. So, and then there's the oil in Venezuela. So like, why are like the fact that we're maintaining this fight over in the Middle East for oil when Venezuela has more oil than Saudi Arabia? Like, so like there's just a series of decision making that is just like it's kind of like what Shane said with the old guy being at the head of just like the baby boomer generation trying to hold on to what they had or what they grabbed, trying to maintain their position on King of the Hill, when in reality, their hill is no longer the tallest. We should just kind of like, while everybody's fighting for this hill, kind of just like, okay, well, you guys can have that hill. We're going to go over here to the mountain, right?
Yeah, the hill has definitely shifted. Oil is declining as the world's global resource, right? Now it's maybe it's energy, but I don't know, but it's not as important as it once was. I mean,
yeah, to your point, like the information that we've gotten around like the effects of plastics on the public health and like maybe the word would be perniciousness of like the microplastics within everybody, like all of nature and all of our health. So like, that's like, there are gonna, there, we're, It may not seem like it now, but there are, we're going to be looking for solutions that rival plastics that get the same durability and versatility, but less of the downside, right? And like the energy thing, to your point, in my opinion, would be uranium. But then besides uranium, there's thorium, which thorium reactors, like there's a lot more access to thorium on the planet than there is uranium. And you can get a lot of the same benefits.
Okay. So I'm all about probabilities. Intel work is just probabilities. There's a whole book. I forgot the guy's name. I think it's the next 100 years. I forgot the guy's name. He wrote a book about the next 100 years, and he believes, if I said his name, you'd know it, but anyway, he believes that the U.S. will bounce back and build up that power. We will shed off a lot of our stupidities and rebuild that power. It's a possibility. It hasn't happened. Well, maybe a little bit on the Romans did a little bit of something like that, but it could happen. I'm not saying it won't, but we would need some type of major turnaround leadership wise. And the reason I ask you about why we haven't been attacked is I think most every other country knows that if they attacked us, we would unite. We wouldn't unite. And right now, us being divided, it suits everybody's purpose.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely agree with that.
So they're sitting back and just poking just to keep us divided. We'll make ourselves decline.
Yeah.
Well, and sorry, Shane, one other thing I wanted to add too is, or like really kind of in the form of a question is like, Randy, in your opinion, what, I have my answer. What do you think is like the main reason why a Roman Empire or in America, what would be like the major force that prevents kind of like us catching ourselves before we like start like going back on the climb back up?
Legacy thinking. It's
like gen pop's like understanding of what's going on. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. It's a shifting, the leadership doesn't understand the new paradigm shift, or they don't care to understand, either
especially
one
for old.
Yes.
Is like, it's not like an ageist thing. It's just like, you guys already know you're on your way out. So like, why wouldn't you? And I'm not saying you guys, I'm saying like the Joe Bidens.
Well,
like,
yeah. And it's apparent, obviously, like these guys can't even run their own Twitter. Right. And so if you can't run your own Twitter, how are you going to keep up the facade? You can't. That technology is, I think, well placed in, you know, younger experienced hands, but not to the degree where, hey, you 7-year-olds and 8-year-olds are out competing, you know, guys in their 30s and 40s, I don't think. But yeah, I mean, there's so many factors that, you know, kind of circling back to Randy's question is why we're not invaded. I think the nations that be that see what's going on, you know, a lot of the BRICS nations, especially, you know, if let's just say that, you know, there was an attack, you know, the idea that you think you're going to get the people who were in charge of America at this moment, you know, I don't think you'd ever have them. I don't think there's any justice. I don't think you'd sit there and be like, oh yeah, you know what, if we just, you know, firebomb or hypersonic, you know, nuclear bomb, you know, DC and DC only, well, you know, session is in, that, you know, we're going to actually get these guys. No, they're going to go underground. They're going to be like little roaches, and, you know, they'd surface, you know, somewhere else anyway. And now you've just provoked, you know, the tiger, so you speak, right? So yeah, it's like, there's that. I think, you know, I think one of the biggest pieces in this, obviously, America's very well armed. I, you know, 500 million guns that they know about in private hands, and some of those are ridiculous. Then you've got the welders and the veterans and, you know, the heavy machinery operators out there. And then geographically, you look at the Rockies and the Appalachians, right? I mean, we had a hell of a time in Afghanistan. Absolutely. You know, literally taking the most advanced, technologically advanced military in the world, and, you know, going after guys that were, you know, sheep herders, and, you know, didn't, not that they weren't sophisticated, but they were in their home turf in the mountains. And I don't think people really understand, if you don't live in the mountains, absolutely how disorienting first they can be, how they will make a lowlander struggle. Just living on, you know, a slant is kind of a weird thing to do. And then traversing those areas, and you're talking about miles up and down, not just straight across. And those people who have lived there literally for generations have all the cheat codes of those areas. So yeah, you might get a few lowland areas, but when the hill people come down and say enough is enough, you dumbasses, right? Like there's I you know, it's almost like God made everybody in hill country live a harder life at higher altitude, so that when they had to go down to the lowland and kick some ass, they had all this superpower where, you know, those guys never really stood a chance. And
you know what's funny is, even the strongest among us, the people who've been to war, who spent the last 20 years at war, where are they heading back to? They're heading back to the mountains for that's a right. reason.
Hell yeah.
Yep. Was there any like any recent events that you wanted to bring up, Randy, at all? Or did you want to go straight into the Bitcoin stuff?
I did want to finish my train of thought with entering Bitcoin, right? Bitcoin's now this divine intervention, if you will, at a certain time and place, as the world hegemon begins to drop, right? Decline. I think we're put here for this reason, for this time and for this place, and with this knowledge, to explore how a simple currency, it's not, it's much, much more than that. If you put up that chart by Jason Lowry right now, I want to talk about this just for a little bit. As we talk about, this is Jason Lowry's book, from his book, Soft War. He actually tweeted this a couple days ago, and he said, this is probably going to be his best chart he ever made, or something like that. But either yesterday or the day before, but he took it down because, you know, he's under the gun. But if you look at this, you know, as you go to the right, you raise up the power of the ability. Power projection is just this, saying, "Hey, I've got this thing, and I can kill you." And just at the top there, you see tactical nuke, right? And that is the last true kinetic power that can be used without serious repercussions to the person wielding it. Obviously, if you go past that and you go to strategic nuclear, the person who pushed that button will eventually die of radiation poisoning or some such like that. But if you go to the left, if you go up that red point, you see drones. That again is also kinetic. But then you go to this artificially intelligent killer drone swarms. Now, you don't need swarms so much, but just in the last year, we've seen firsts of drones killing drones. This is happening in Ukraine and in the Black Sea. Drones are killing drones. It's pretty amazing. This is a pretty amazing thing to be happening, because no human is being killed in these scenarios. Obviously, drones are killing humans too. But we're getting to this point where when a power can take out a power to be kinetic, then we're entering a new realm. So I've kind of dedicated kind of like the rest of my life to understanding these two things, drones and basically Bitcoin, right? These are the two things that are going to be the near future power projection capabilities. How does Bitcoin do this? Well, you kind of need to read Jason Lowry's big thesis on how it works. But the bottom line is this, is that it locks up information on a global network that can't be messed with. period. Governments and have people, they've tried, they can't do it. What does that mean? That means thing can be put, the Bitcoin blockchain, because there is so much power behind it, it can be used to secure other things, I mean, other than just money. Now, true, I mean, Bitcoiners generally look at just the money piece. Jason Lowry is looking at other uses, mainly cybersecurity type stuff. But I think as we move forward, I think us as Bitcoiners, we need to step back a little bit and look at Bitcoin in a little different light, because there's a little bit more to it than we often think. It's more than just a cryptocurrency. It's more than just a store of value, a medium exchange, and a unit of account. It's more than just that. Those are just economics. Lowry is hitting on this. Other people are starting to hit on this. Governance is being done. We talked with what was the guy's name, with voting. They're putting the voting.
Off the top of my head, it is Carlos.
Yeah. Anyway, so he blinked out on me. So anyway, so we can use this for governance type stuff. So we have to be a little cautious about just thinking Bitcoin is just one small thing moving into the future. Does that mean we shitcoin? No, it doesn't. But it does mean we have to be open to the technology and where it leads, because I didn't see where we are with Bitcoin now. I didn't see that 10 years. This is going to be my 10th year in Bitcoin. Wow. I didn't see it back then. I just saw it as an investment, or actually I saw it as an international trade mechanism, which we haven't even really gotten into in the world yet that much. So anyway, I'm really excited about where this goes, but I don't think it's going to go exactly where we think it's going to go.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah.
Natural pause. Let's go ahead and hit up our other sponsors and pay some more bills. A big shout out to our friends over at Punchplate. Coddle.co, that's CODL.co. Punchplates are a durable medium for your Bitcoin and can store 12 words or 24 word Bitcoin backups. Storing your Bitcoin in metal ensures your keys will survive in the elements, accidental spills, and in some cases even fire. You don't have to worry about smeared ink or ripped paper, and can sleep soundly knowing your Bitcoin are inscribed on a Punchplate. These are the best prices you're going to find in this industry. $24 for a 24-word punch plate. It's simple. It's a punch and a plate. No little letters. No stamps with letters on them. Just a punch and a plate. Go check them out at coddle.co. That's punch plate at coddle.co. Solo Satoshi is dedicated to the advancement of open source Bitcoin mining, with a steadfast commitment to the security and decentralization of the Bitcoin network. As a pioneering force in the Bitcoin space, your mission is to empower individuals and businesses worldwide with innovative, secure, and decentralized mining solutions. At Solo Satoshi, they believe in the transformative power of open source software and the potential it holds for the future of Bitcoin mining. They strive to foster a community of developers and enthusiasts who share our vision of a more secure and decentralized Bitcoin landscape. Our dedication to open source principles is at the heart of their mission, driving their commitment to transparency, collaboration, and innovation. They are passionate about supporting the growth and the development of the Bitcoin network, and they recognize the critical role that open source software and developers play in achieving this goal. By promoting and contributing to open source ecosystems, they aim to facilitate a more robust and resilient Bitcoin network, ensuring its longevity and success for years to come. At Solo Satoshi, their mission is not only to provide cutting-edge mining solutions, but also to educate and inspire others about the importance of decentralization and open source principles in the Bitcoin space. They believe that by working together, we can create a future where Bitcoin mining is more accessible, efficient, and aligned with the core values of decentralization and open collaboration. All right, we're back. We lost Mike. He got lost in the commercial.
Yeah. I was checking out burning a plate, you know. But I wanted to update you guys. Lisa, thanks for listening, Lisa, by the way. She already commented down below. But like she sent me the title of that book is The Next 100 Years, A Forecast for the 21st Century by George Friedman.
That's right.
So now that we've got we actually have the doomerishness checked off and the bullishness checked off. So yeah. What else do we want to talk about?
I mean, it wouldn't be a complete show if you know what I mean? This is kind of, you know, one of those times where
who the fuck said that? What have we got here? A fucking comedian, private joker.
It's everybody's favorite time here on Bitcoin Veterans. It's story time. Randy so graciously gave us one of the best stories that I think we've had in Bitcoin Veterans history, where you were getting your ass chewed by Jocko. But if you want to watch that one, you're gonna have to go back in time and find that one on YouTube. But that was a good one. You got a story for us tonight, Randy?
Yeah, you know what? I decided I didn't decide. I told a story in Nashville. Just off the cuff, and everybody got all excited about it. And it I don't know, maybe other factors were involved, but everybody thought it was pretty funny. So I decided to go ahead and tell that story again. You guys remember this, which one I'm talking about?
I hope I don't, but kind of.
I'll probably remember it as you get into it.
Okay. So last 3 years, for fun, I've had a weird career, but one of my ideal jobs was to be a SEER instructor, even as an early SEAL. I was a survival junkie. I loved living out in the woods and doing all that kind of stuff. And I was like, man, it'd be so cool to be a SEAL and then be a survival instructor and all that. And
I think you said it just like that night.
Huh?
I think you said it just like that night. You probably just kind of slurred right into it. And we're like, yeah, this is gonna be a good
story. Yeah, I'm sure there's a little bit more. Sorry. anyway, but so I did. So for the last 3 years, I was a survival instructor for SEALs. Not only SEALs, but the SWIC guys, were the guys that drive the boats, right? So I was probably the lead guy when it came to a lot of the survival stuff. Like nobody was comfortable calling an animal and butchering it and all that kind of stuff. But I was 100% comfortable doing it. So in most survival schools, they use a rabbit. And you use a rabbit and you hold it upside down, you bop it in the head and it's dead, and then you skin it and you have dinner that night. Now, it's really easy because the students haven't eaten for quite a number of days, so they're hungry. And they see a rabbit and they're like, oh, food, right? So the problem is most people don't. So one of my ancillary jobs was to get the animals. So there's not a whole lot of people who raise meat rabbits near San Diego. So it's always a hard job to find rabbits. So we have different stuff. We have chicken. Sometimes we have quail and stuff like that. Well, it was late. I was late getting it this one class, and the only thing available was a turkey. Turkeys are pretty big, all right, pretty big, actually real big. And so now here's the thing: the students have to use exactly what they have out in the field. In this case, it's a knife, right? There's no axes or anything like this. And so I killed chickens before, and quail, it's pretty easy. Cut off the head and hold it, and it bleeds out, right? Well, I'd never killed a turkey with a knife before. So I was like, eh, same way, right? So anyway, I'm not the one to do it. The students do it. So I got this young kid up there. He's 20 years old, and he's looking at this monster turkey, and the turkey is just doing this thing, like just looking at you. And it is, you know, his neck is about that thick. And so I was like, all right, you got to lay him down on the ground. You got to hold his feet, keep his feet to the side, put his head down and chop off his head, let him bleed out kind of thing. Well, the turkey's, you know, 20, 30 pounds. I don't know. It's big. Right. And so the kid, he bends over, leans over. He's got a buddy helping him. Okay, you hold, I'll cut. You know, of course, these guys have been using their knife for the last 3 or 4 days, so it's dull as can be. And I was like, all right, you got to use what you got to use. Hopefully, you sharpened it before you came here, right? So he starts doing the job, right? Well, it's not working. Of course, the turkey goes bonkers. Turkey starts kicking, and if you've ever seen their legs, they're like this. Their claws, right? Their talons. So the kid holding him, he lets the legs come out a little bit, and it starts hitting the kid in the stomach, and it pushes him away, and he scratches the kid. The kid's like screaming, like, ah! Like he's eviscerated, right? The turkey flies away. Now turkey's bleeding a little bit. The whole class, they got about 20 kids here. I say kids, they're 20 years old.
20-year-old Navy SEALs.
I was like, go get them. I was like, that's your dinner. And of course, they all just like, and it's nighttime, right? So turkey's running around. They're throwing rocks at it. Eventually, it gets stuck. It gets stuck in this bush, and they grab it, and they bring it back. And it's bleeding, but it's not an arterial cut. And the kid, he's like, I'm not touching that thing. So somebody else like, I'll do it. And I was like, all right, you know what to do. And he came up there, and he was a country boy. He was like, came up there and just finally took off the head. And of course, it took the whole class to hold down the turkey at this point. And so they let the turkey bleed out, and they had turkey later on that night. But it was pretty funny. That kid, you know, went back with these claw marks all over his chest, and that other poor kid was traumatized, just straight up traumatized. He wouldn't do that again.
I remember there being a lot more blood and a lot more fucks in on the Fortune Natural.
I don't know, like, my audience out there. So yeah, there was more all of that. Yep. There's a much, much more out of that.
I can just see a group of guys, you know, SEALs especially, you know, like no quit Navy SEALs, like got to track down this turkey that's bleeding at night. They're starving. They've been in
and they're hungry, right?
Oh man, hungry is a hostage at that point.
Well, I was like, hey guys, put your knives away to grab them.
When they're training to be like some of the most effective tools of war, and they're getting bested by a turkey.
Yeah, for many of them, this is the first time they've ever seen anything killed. As a matter of fact, the majority, probably something like 90% of SEALs and SWCC, of the guys I ever taught, had never either seen anything killed or even killed anything. So
that's fascinating.
Very new thing.
Yeah, and it's also one of those things, you know, you take a group of guys that, you know, have that warrior mentality, right? A lot of them don't come from the country, you know, and they weren't raised as hunters or fishers.
Most of them don't.
No, this is, you know, this is one of the first times they're truly connected to the land in so many different ways. And I remember, you know, guys freaking out about, you know, SEALs jumping in our little Zodiacs when we were doing like OTHs, and you'd hit a kelp bed or you'd get too close to a buoy or something. And, you know, the guys that hated swimming with sharks, That was definitely my phobia. And then, you know, you had those other guys that were Californians that knew the damage a mountain lion could do. And when we would go out on patrol out there, you know, they're like, you better fucking stay up at night, motherfucker. those cats will come in and kill one of us. And they were right, you know, but like some of us had no experience with mountain lions before that kind of stuff. So yeah, to see the phobias come out in these warriors about different, you know, different types of beasts that are out there in the wild. It's really kind
Speaking
of
which, did I ever tell you the guys story about the bear story?
Encore.
Let's story go. Number two. Yeah, I mean, it's only 8:15. The night's young, Randy.
All right. This is actually one of my favorite stories. I totally forgot about this one. I should have told this one to start with. All right. So we're in Upper Washington. We're at it's right there on the Canadian border. We're at an advanced sniper course. And my partner, his name was Country. His nickname was Country. Any guesses why? Anyway, he's from Oklahoma. Anyway, skinny boy from Oklahoma. But anyway, he was good. He was good. So I was a lead sniper. He was a secondary. So what typically happens is when we practice most of the time, the lead sniper would actually spot just to get the secondary up to speed and be really, really good. And so we're up in so this the instructors put a steel target. I don't know, let's call it a kilometer away from us. And we have to go through, now this is Upper Washington State. So there's plenty of trees and mountains but fields also to get through. So we're locked and loaded. We both have, ARs, and plus our sniper rifles. So, you know, we don't always lock and load, but in this case, you know, bears, right?
Yeah, bears.
So, but it's 223. Hopefully, a lot of rounds will do the job. But anyway, so we go through this field and we get to this skinny narrow draw where all these trees were, and that was going to be our stock lane to the target. And since he was the lead sniper on this one, he had the long gun, probably 300 Wood Mag. And so we go in there, and as soon as we get in the woods, we see this mama bear. She comes up to us. These two little cubs. The little cubs are looking at us like, "What's this?" You know. And mama stands up on her hind legs, and she's big.
It's grizzly or a black bear.
It was a brown bear.
Okay.
It was a brown bear, a grizzly. So, you know, I don't know. You know, most of my brown bears have been Kodiak grizzlies when we up to Kodiak.
Not black is scary.
Yeah, yeah.
This it's grizzly, all scary,
she
man.
Was big. She was big. And she stood up and we're looking up at her and she's like, "What are you guys?" And you know what? We're only probably 15 yards from her.
Oof.
Yeah, not far. Far at all.
Nope. Hard pass.
We're like, off safe. And he's like, "What do we do?" I was like, "Just aim and hold." And so we were both just aim and hold. And she got down and did that kind of stuff. And little babies were like, "I want to go play." And I was like, "No, you don't." And so, anyway, she smelled us and ran off and out into the field. And we hear over the radio, because, you know, the instructors all have radios. We hear over the radio, "Holy shit, did you see that bear come out of there?" And, of course, we can't talk. We're like, and so we move on to the target. And, of course, our nerves are a little bit shot. So we're like, "All right, just slow it down here. Get your heart rate working, all right? Got to finish your job. I'll be your security. Don't worry about, you know, don't worry about anything." So we get to our layup position, and he's like, "Oh, there's the target." And he's kind of getting his rifle all set up. He's getting on the gun, and I'm getting on the spotting scope. And I don't know. I just couldn't help it. I just got this hair up my butt. I grabbed him by the leg and I went,
oh no.
Holy shit. The gun went flying. He was like, ah! And he's like, what the? And it freaked him out. And he got up and he's like, you mother. Right. And he just like started like throwing things at me. And he's like, of course, we're on a stock, right? The instructors are like looking for us. And he's just yelling and screaming. And we hear over the radio, it's like, what's going on over there? Like, we saw another bear. We're like, all right, get back on the stock. He got back on the stock. Poor kid. He got on the gun. He missed bad. He missed the shot from bad. And it wouldn't let me live that one down for a long time. So I couldn't help it. So that's my bear story.
Yeah. I like that one.
That's great. That is a terrifying story. I mean, in real life, when you've got any mama bear in front of you, man, if you guys don't know bears, the most dangerous bears in the world are the moms with little cubs around, man. And geez, I would have shit my pants. I guarantee it.
Yeah.
Bad. My only personal experience with bears was being out in Colorado, like going on like hiking trails and stuff. We had one black bear that was following us or stalking us, however you want to phrase it, like following us for a while. And I'm just like, I'm not liking this, man. Like, I like it more than a mountain lion stalking us, but like, I still don't like the situation at all.
Yeah.
Screw that.
Being prey, being stalked is never a good time. I'll have to tell you guys my land nav mountain lion story another time, but yeah, that's I tell you what, it's always the best when you see guys freaking out about the wildlife that have never been in the wildlife. That's one of the best memories I have of the Marine Corps for sure. All right, let's start wrapping it up. It's 8:22. You guys got some parting thoughts for tonight?
I think probably like the biggest thing would be like, I mean, we already touched on it a little bit, but like, and I think we try to touch on it every episode, but it's like, When we're talking like the doomerishness, like again, like I reiterate it as much as possible. Like, I'm not like, none of us are here trying to like scare anybody into any sort of decision-making tree or anything like that. It's literally just because I guess I'll like opine a little bit on like the doomerishness from earlier. Is I don't get like, I don't fall into the same kind of like mental state that a lot of other people do when they see a lot of like the things that are happening, particularly the bad things that are happening around them. Like there's a sense of like, people tend to get like overwhelmed. I'm the exact opposite. Like the more that I see of what's happening, like the reality of what I'm seeing around me, I get more comfortable because it's like, I'm getting more of the map revealed to me, because what I don't like is fog of war. I don't like not knowing what's or not understanding what's going on. Because if I don't see the events that are happening, the reality of the events that are happening, the reality of the implication of the events that are happening and the relations to other events around, like, and I can't parse out what's happening, then I don't know how to plan a course of attack or a route through all of that chaos to not only where like I'm safe and my loved ones are safe, but where we can also even benefit off that environment, off that situation, so we can set ourselves up for like a better, brighter tomorrow. That's the whole, that's my whole mission with like the resident doom lord and just like the stuff that, like, especially target softening that I write about on my Substack. Like I'm not trying to scare anybody. It's just like, I'm trying to highlight the environment so you guys can figure out your own situation. Cause the last thing that I like seeing, I don't like seeing people get sucker punched, whether it's a video on the internet or it's a country. Like, it's just like the that's how the worst outcomes happen, is when you get hit by something you weren't expecting or looking for.
Yeah. Well said, Mike.
Yeah, I very much agree on that. We can't run around with our heads in the clouds or in the sand, either one. We have to keep our head on a swivel, understand what's around us, and still make the world a better place every day, every single day. And I would look to the people who are listening to this and the people in BV, all of us, we have got to get smart on where we're going. Don't just understand that number go up is good. It's not just about that anymore. Things are about to get a little crazy. Hopefully we can protect ourselves and our families and make the world a better place. It takes knowledge, and there's so much happening right now that we got to get smart. We got to get smart on all what Bitcoin is, how it presents it in the world, and how we orient around it. Same thing with all types of power. Get it.
Man, what a great show. The comment section was blowing up tonight. Randy, you're always a hit on the show, and you know, thank you for everything you do behind the scenes as well. Hats off to you. If you guys are joining late, Randy is the one that puts together our daily brief, and it's fantastic. It's extremely objective, and he puts a lot of work into that. It goes out every day, so big hats off to you, Randy, for doing that. Coming in here and having a good time with us. Mike, really, really love this this format that we've got going here, and this, you know, to be able to show up here on Tuesday nights now, knock this thing out in the beginning of the week, and get it produced and everything else, and have it out is, I think it's a really great function for me anyway, and I got to thank everybody out there, from the vets here in Bitcoin Veterans, all of our guests, you know, our hosts for doing this, and then definitely our sponsors. Go out there, check out Black Sheep and Punch Plate and Solo Satoshi. Man, Solo Satoshi is killing it lately. I mean, I think since the convention, they've had three people that have mined blocks with Solo. Yeah. That's an incredible feat.
That's absurd.
Yeah, it really is. And then Paladine Tactical. Go out there and check all those guys out. If you want to get involved with Bitcoin Veterans, you just got to go to the website, bitcoinveterans.org. There you can sign up. We'll get you thrown into the chats. We'll introduce you to everybody. And then, you know, get ready to white knuckle it, because you're going to be holding on for dear life trying to keep up with this crowd. But we need you. This is a decentralized organization that, as we mentioned tonight earlier, this is going to be one of those networks that I think is going to be a great force out there for the betterment of society and for legacy, so that, you know, things don't repeat nearly as soon as they have, you know, in our history. So, again, guys, thanks for being here. Thanks to everybody out there for doing what you do in Bitcoin Veterans and elsewhere and in this community. You know, keep the fight. We got a long way to go. And there is some crazy stuff headed at us, but I think this group is one of those groups that is going to lead the way, is going to be the torchbearer, like they always have, because they've got something that a lot of other people don't have, and that is a network of trusted individuals that's working from a proof of work point of view, and that's something you just can't fake in this community. So hats off to everybody. Go out there and enjoy your week. Get after it. Until next week, we'll see you 7 o'clock next Tuesday. Peace. We lost Hobart again. Should probably end the stream now. Peace out. This time for real, everybody.